Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It's good to be back with you. I've missed the past couple of programs because of my travels. Recently, I was in Houston, Texas, meeting with a bunch of great Americans down there, and that's what we really should focus on, is that at the end of the day, we are all Americans, whether we're registered as Democrats or independents or Republicans or whatever. This is about Americans trying to figure out what's best for America, which incredibly does not really seem to be working that well in Washington and in all too many state capitals and city halls around the United States. Our alleged leaders are doing anything but leading, in my humble opinion. Those of you who are familiar with me know that I am a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. And in the wake of the horrific terrorist attacks of September 11th, 2001, I decided that it was important, worthwhile, to take my perspectives and make them available to as many of our fellow Americans as possible. As a New Yorker, I can tell you the ashes landed on my house. My neighbors were killed. So not only was I seeing this as an attack against my country, our country, indeed it was, but this was real personal for me because this was my hometown that was hit. And that's what I've been doing virtually ever since, and so I'm happy to join you. If you want to read a little bit more about me, if you're not that familiar with me and want to find out who this guy is who's out there doing this stuff, please go to a couple of terrific websites. Let me start out by telling you about michaelcutler.net. That's one word, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. I also have another website, talkborder.com. We've posted some videos up there you may find to be of interest. I hope you do. That's one word, talkborder.com. And finally, for a number of years, it's been my pleasure to be a senior fellow with a terrific organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. Their website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. They are located, as they would like to tell you, in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. Great place to visit. I've had the pleasure, privilege of being in California a number of times to visit with them and the great folks that I've worked with in California, who I've come to think of as being really good friends. So for a number of years, I've been working with them, even though here I am on the East Coast, but through the magic of telecommunications and occasionally airliners, I work with them on an almost daily basis, writing for them along with some other terrific writers. So I would suggest you go to their website, capsweb.org. Let's get right into it. You know, it's been a couple of weeks since I've been here. And in the interim, and one of the things I like to do, and by the way, let me just tell you, if you want to call in and join the conversation, the number for you to call is 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. One of the areas of fertile evidence of just how screwed up things are is to go to the ICE, that's Immigration and Customs Enforcement website. They have some amazing material that's up there, because if you look at the stuff that they report on, you will see that one of the things that they do is to write about successes scored by ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, as you might imagine. Well, September 23rd, just a couple days ago, ICE posted on its website a news release boasting about how Immigration and Customs Enforcement deported a Polish fugitive who was wanted for manslaughter back in his native Poland. And it starts out by saying that an arrest warrant was issued for Wiatocha on August 30th, 2004, by the Bialystok Regional Court in Poland in connection with a fatal traffic accident that killed one person and injured a second victim. According to the warrant, on December 28, 1990, Wiatocha was driving in Bialystok when he violated traffic regulations, hit two pedestrians, and killed one. He then fled the scene. Now, what's remarkable is the news release talks about how this guy, who committed an accident that resulted in a fatality, it would certainly appear that he's being charged as a criminal in the matter, entered the United States by running the Mexican border that's supposed to separate the United States from Mexico, catch this, folks, in 1991. This guy has been able to remain in the United States for over 20 years, two decades. And what's even more disturbing, and it's right in their news release, I mean, you know, you look at this and you say, is this really something you want to brag about? I mean, certainly I'm glad we got rid of this character. Pardon me. If you haven't noticed, I have something of an autumn cold, and they're a nuisance, but I'm soldiering on because the show must go on, as they say. But here's a guy who enters the United States illegally, fleeing Polish authorities. He apparently knew that he was in trouble. And then he gets arrested and convicted of trafficking in ecstasy, a dangerous drug. And he was on probation. So we had to go look for him, we meaning ICE. I'm no longer with the INS, although I did spend 30 years with that agency. They go looking for this guy even after he had been in custody, even after he'd been successfully convicted of trafficking in drugs, and according to the article, he committed other crimes in the United States. And we just ignored him. He was, for whatever reason, never deported, never turned over to deportation, never removed, and he was in custody. So this guy is running around committing more crimes in the United States, and then they get a warrant from Poland, and they said, well, you know what, maybe now we should finally do something about this guy. Can you picture this? You know, we have to come back to why we have immigration laws in the first place, folks. The immigration laws are designed to protect American lives, and they are designed to protect American jobs. So how on earth, I would love to know, can we have a situation that's here in the United States where we absolutely ignore our immigration laws, ignore everything that we're supposed to do to protect our citizens and our country from the bad guys, and the government, through several administrations, has failed to do its job. The guy ran the border under the previous George Bush administration, 91, apparently. He was here throughout the Clinton administration. He was here throughout the George W. Bush administration. And finally, 3.5 years into the Obama administration, only because, I guess, they got notice of a warrant from Poland, that immigration said, well, maybe we should do something about this guy. This is not border security. I don't care what Janet Napolitano says. And this isn't about the Democrats or the Republicans. It is about our government lacking the political will and the moral spine and the integrity to enforce some of the most fundamental laws on the books, laws that are designed to keep bad guys out of our country and make certain that if they are found in our country, that we remove them. So, you know, let's be very clear. I'm not even pointing a finger at Mr. Obama here for a change. I'm telling you that this happened under George Bush Sr., under the Clinton administration, under George W. Bush. But, of course, it has only gotten worse with the current administration. Absolutely astonishing. And that's right there on the ICE website. If you don't believe it, go to the ICE website. As the saying goes, read it and weep. I'm certainly glad they got rid of this bum. But, gosh, 21 years, it takes my breath away, especially when you recognize the fact that this guy had been in custody and charged and prosecuted for selling ecstasy, a dangerous drug, an illegal drug. Remarkable. Left alone, out on the street so he could commit more crime. It reminds me of the story of that thug, Ronaldo Rayside, who I had physically deported back in the 80s. He came back. He was arrested twice by the NYPD. NYPD never notified immigration. And finally, what happens? He kills a 24-year-old cop by the name of Robert Machete. His wife is pregnant with a daughter he would never meet. I testified at the murder trial. I met his daughter. I interviewed his brother, Tom Machete, who now himself is a retired New York City cop. A senseless, needless death committed because the NYPD refused to notify immigration that they had this guy in custody, even though he'd been deported. He had had a green card. He had his bite at the apple and got convicted for drug-related crimes. That didn't bother the NYPD. Look what they did. They absolutely ignored the fact that this guy was illegally present in the United States, and left him out on the street where he was then able to, commit a murder. Now, what's really astonishing here, again, and I'm going to have to guess that this Polish individual was found in Chicago. Now, I want you to remember, Chicago has sanctuary policies. This is why those sanctuary policies make no sense. He was arrested in Illinois. State of Illinois could care less about the immigration laws. Even when you're convicted of crimes, God forbid we should enforce those laws. It infuriates me. It should infuriate everybody. And then look at what's going on with the political campaign. It is childish. I feel like I'm back in junior high school, not even high school, in the playground after school with everybody throwing insults at each other. And what's the latest insult? Well, who's creating more jobs? Who would outsource more jobs? Who would send jobs to China? President Obama, as I have written about, as I wrote for Fox News Latino, as I have talked about on radio appearances elsewhere, and of course on my own program, President Obama created this so-called prosecutorial discretionary program. I call it prosecutorial deception, to give what may well amount to millions of illegal aliens with employment authorization at a time when Americans are out of work, losing their homes to foreclosure, possibly losing their families to the authorities. Lose your home, folks, become homeless, and see how quickly you will have authorities try to take children away from their parents. Suddenly, no one's concerned about splitting up families. Okay, kind of remarkable. So rather than Mr. Romney jumping up and down and calling the president out on this and saying, why on earth would you give potentially millions of illegal aliens employment authorization when there aren't enough jobs to go around for lawful immigrants and United States citizens, we hear nothing from Mr. Romney. I am fearful that this election will be a case of heads they win, tails we lose. The immigration laws are not about discriminating. The open borders advocates, I call them the immigration anarchists, have done a great job of creating myths and lies and misunderstandings, making it appear that immigration laws are all about brown skin. If you're familiar with my background, you know that I was named for my grandmother who perished in the Holocaust. If my mother wasn't able to legally immigrate to America, she would not have survived. I wouldn't be here. My kids wouldn't be here. So in a very real sense, I owe America not only my life and my mother's life, although she's now since passed away. She died when I was in college, but even my children's lives. I'm not against a legal immigration system that has integrity. Incredibly, our immigration system has virtually no integrity. But, again, the primary purpose for the immigration laws is to protect American lives and to protect the jobs of Americans. It's failing abysmally at both. And yet, the man who wants to be the next president doesn't stand up and say a word. I tried to speak to a guy who's running for Congress. If he's listening, he probably knows I'm talking about him, but I won't give out his name or what state he's from. But it was remarkable. I said, you really need to take your opponent to task. This guy is a Republican. His opponent is a Democrat. The Democrat is the incumbent. He's trying to unseat an incumbent. Certainly, Mr. Obama is not a Republican. I said, why don't you talk about what is going on with giving employment authorization to what the president said would be 800,000 aliens? The Pew Hispanic Center said would be 1.4 million. The Migration Policy Institute said 1.8. And now there are news organizations that have estimates running as high as 3 or 4 million. I said, why don't you talk about that? And he said, Mike, no one that I speak to on the campaign trail is asking me about immigration. I said, wait a minute. Are they asking you about unemployment? Are they asking you about gangs in your area? He said, well, sure they are. I said, then why don't you talk about the way that a failure to enforce the immigration laws exacerbates all of those challenges? He says, well, I would, but no one's asking me about immigration. Astonishing, isn't it? Absolutely astonishing. So, you know, you reach a point where you scratch your head and you say to yourself, is this really what leadership is supposed to be about? Is this the way that people who want to be members of the Senate or the House of Representatives are going to demonstrate leadership? I know of another person running to unseat a Democrat senator from another state. This person's staffer reached out to me, supposed to have a conference call with the candidate. 3 or 4 times, got postponed. Now they don't want to talk about immigration at all. You know, I can understand if they say, well, look, we'll talk about immigration. You have the conference call, and then they say, well, we're not going to go in that direction. I may not like that decision, but fine. But to not even be willing to have a conference call about the issue, do you think that these candidates are really concerned about Americans who are out of work, or that they're looking for the fat cats to give them their campaign contributions so that they can air more nonsense commercials? Because that seems to be all that we're getting, is nonsense. Because I'll tell you what, if I was to run for Congress, I'd be jumping up and down about how the failures of this administration to enforce immigration laws is endangering national security, is creating opportunities for the drug cartels and transnational gangs to set up shop in virtually every American town and city, is making it more and more difficult for Americans to find jobs. That's what I'd be hammering away at. When you want to talk about how do we solve problems, there's a solution. You could free up jobs that millions of illegal aliens are now holding and put Americans to work overnight. You know, it takes time and money to build a facility where people get hired. You have to get people to invest in it, then you get the money, then you have to build the building, and then you got to hire the people. This could take months. This could take years. But let me tell you, as an immigration agent, I spent a number of years in the squad that raided factories. And it was really rewarding to raid a factory, arrest illegal aliens the same day, seeing American workers and lawful immigrant workers of every religion, of every ethnicity, of every race. This isn't about brown skin or purple skin or polka dots, folks. But to just see people lawfully entitled to work in the United States filing in through the front door, perhaps the day after we raided a factory or some other facility, seeing Americans get back to work. What a great thing to do. So understand that this is a solution to a problem that the politicians don't want to talk about because too many of them are either too foolish or have been bought off. As a federal agent, I wasn't allowed to take so much as a cup of coffee. You know? Oh, my God, you can't have a cup of coffee. It might influence how you do your job. But when politicians are taking with both hands and can brag about how they're the best fundraisers in America, wow, imagine if a civil servant did that, whether it's a police officer or a school teacher or a federal agent. They'd nail your tail to the wall, and rightfully so. So we have a system of legalized bribery in America, and it's called campaign finance. Absolutely astonishing. So, you know, understand what we're up against. But then part of the problem is that not enough of you folks who are out there and your neighbors and your friends and your relatives are getting your voices heard. That's absolutely one of the issues that we're dealing with. It is critically important that everyone who hears this program, and, you know, it's kind of funny sitting here in my house doing the show. You never know if 8 people or 8,000 people are listening or whatever the numbers are. But if all of you could promise and then follow through on the promise to call and write your congressmen, your senators, local politicians, and hammer them and make it clear that immigration law enforcement has nothing to do with racism or bigotry, everything to do with the protection of American jobs and American lives, to keep out the criminals, to keep out the terrorists, and to keep out people to take the jobs that Americans desperately need. There is no job an American won't take if they're losing their damn house to foreclosure. You know, my dad was a construction worker. He was a plumber. He will always be my biggest hero. He was one of those guys, I got to tell you, I lost him to lung cancer back when I was 19 and he was 57, and I'm on the wrong side of 60, so this is a long time ago. But my dad was that guy that if you called him up and said, "Pop, I have a problem," he would show up. And for me, my father showing up was kind of like the cavalry showing up, because he always knew a way of dealing with whatever the problem was. You know, the car didn't run, he'd get it going. Whatever the problem was, my pop would show up, and I knew that the situation was about to be resolved, whatever it was. He worked his tail off, and construction workers still do that. When I hear this nonsense about a work Americans won't do, you know, I can't drive by a construction site and smell that smell of the damp earth, because they've excavated an opening in the ground to build the foundation, whether it's the tower being built at Ground Zero or private homes. My dad mostly worked on private homes and small office buildings in Brooklyn, Queens. But those smells, those sounds, it takes me back to the time when my dad was alive and worked with his buddies to build these buildings. And they did magic. But, you know, no matter what the weather was, no matter how cold or how hot or whether he felt well or didn't feel well, he went out there and did the job. And then when the economy slowed down, or if the company finished up building the job, or they couldn't get additional funding and the job stopped and my pop got laid off, he would take the family car. It wasn't legal, but he would pick people up at the bus stop and drive them to the train station for, you know, $25 a head. This was 40-something years ago, just to bring some money in. Under the law, you're not supposed to do it if you don't have a taxi cab. This is as close my father came to breaking the laws I'd ever seen him do, but this was an act of desperation. A tradesman, as he loved to say that he was a plumber by trade, reduced to driving the family car to pick up a couple of bucks by driving people in my neighborhood to the train station during the rush hour just to put some money on the table. There is no job that desperate workers won't take, as long as it puts food on the table, as long as it pays to keep the lights on. And so we hear this nonsense from the politicians, both sides of the aisle, about the work Americans won't do. I had an interesting discussion with somebody who used to have a high position within the immigration agencies under DHS. And if he's listening, or if his friends are listening, I'm not going to give up your name, because I still need to talk to these people. But here was the guy who was telling me that America is facing incredible competition from China and India, and so I've got to forget about this business about worrying about American jobs and look about what's good for America. Pardon me. Now think about that. He told me I was being narrow-minded and only focusing on American jobs. That would be a great idea if somehow we could create other centers for research and development outside the United States, because we know it's inevitable that companies are going to want to do R&D, research and development, out of the United States to cut down on taxes and other expenses. So it made perfect sense to try to do whatever could be done to help them in that effort to get R&D out of China. And I was in shock. And I, you know, you're sitting there listening to this. How on earth can you talk about America doing well when the average American is not doing well? You know, this is an abject disconnect between those amazingly articulate words of President Abraham Lincoln when he talked about a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. To say that America can do well if Americans are out of work, that America as a country can do well if Americans can't find a job and can't support themselves and their families? How on earth do we separate the American people from their own government and make it sound as though it's narrow-minded or foolish to think that there should be some kind of a connection between the quality of life of Americans and how well America does as a nation? What an outrageous statement. I can't even begin to tell you how furious it all made me, but of course I sat there with my little smile and let this nonsense go on for a bit. But, you know, it's astonishing that people in Washington have forgotten that at the end of the day, America and Americans are inextricably linked. The whole point to having a successful country is to help make the citizens of that country have every opportunity to be successful as well. If you want to disagree, you want to make your own comment, you give me a call at 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. You know, it just astounds me. It absolutely astounds me that you can sit there with somebody who held a high position within an agency that's involved with the enforcement and administration of immigration laws, telling me that it is narrow-minded and kind of old-fashioned, quaint, I don't know what word you could use, to separate or to be concerned about jobs and Americans at a time when America needs to be made stronger. How in the world can anyone make a statement like that with a straight face and think that this squares with reality? The point for this country to be successful is to provide opportunities for Americans to be successful. And if you divide Americans away from their country like that, then basically all we are oarsmen on a slave ship. Not that the government is responsible for providing us with success, but that a government should provide the opportunities for Americans. The immigration laws used to be enforced by the Labor Department prior to the Second World War. That's how we built the middle class. That's how we built the American dream. To make certain that Americans would not have to compete with foreign workers for their jobs, so that we could increase wages, create better working conditions, and more opportunities. But of course, what this guy told me works perfectly when you look at Alan Greenspan, who on April 30th, 2009, testified before the Senate Immigration Subcommittee for Chuck Schumer. Incredibly, I watched the hearing live. If you go to my website, michaelcutler.net, if you go to capsweb.org, they've posted it up on their website. Alan Greenspan talked about how too much money is going to this privileged elite group. And who was the privileged elite? Not the CEOs that make 500 times what their hardworking employees earn. No, no, no. Not the rip-off artists, the Bernie Madoffs. Oh, no, 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 no. Those weren't the privileged elite. To Alan Greenspan, the privileged elite are Americans who have skills or education. And he actually had the chutzpah, as we say in Brooklyn, that the goal should be to eliminate or at least greatly reduce inequality in wages. Boy, that sounds good. We're all against inequality. If it's based on gender, if it's based on race or religion or ethnicity, if that's the case, I'm with you. Good deal. But that wasn't what he talked about. He said that we've got to eliminate or greatly reduce inequality based on skill. Takes your breath away, doesn't it? The whole idea to the American dream was that if you got an education or you acquired a trade, you could make more money than if you did not get that education. And now we have Alan Greenspan saying, no, 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 no. If you drop out of high school, or if you have a PhD, there should be very little difference in the wages that you earn. This is insanity. This is sheer madness. And yet nobody marched on Washington. Nobody in the news reported on it. It was a shot across the bow of the middle class, and he must have been using a silencer because nobody seemed to have heard it. Well, I'm telling you about it here and now. This is what Alan Greenspan, apparently at the behest of Chuck Schumer, the guy who they say you never want to get between Chuck and a video camera on Capitol Hill, it's the most dangerous place in Washington, brings in Greenspan to actually advocate for eliminating wage inequality between Americans with skills and no skills, who actually said the solution to our problems was to eliminate immigration quotas, pardon me, so that we could take care of this privileged elite who are getting too much money. Absolutely astonishing. Absolutely astonishing. Folks, file it under. You cannot make this stuff up. Let's move along to another article that I wrote, and in fact it's posted up at CAPS. And this one I think is going to amaze you also. And again, this now is based on a report that was written by the GAO, the General Accountability Office. And you won't believe this one. But this is the article, Problems Still Abound in the Student Visa Program. You know, we keep hearing this nonsense that Americans are either too lazy or too stupid. We're too lazy to do the hard-working job, so we bring in the illegal aliens, who, of course, do the work Americans won't do because we're a bunch of lazy bums. Ask the fools in Congress who are glad to tell you about how Americans just won't do those jobs. Tell that to the construction workers. Tell that to the men who work in the steel foundries and the coal mines. Tell that to the firefighters who race into burning buildings to try to rescue total strangers even as the buildings collapse around them. Tell that to law enforcement officers who chase armed criminals down dark alleyways not knowing if they're going to go home alive that day, whether it's a cop or a federal agent. Look at the backbreaking, filthy jobs Americans do, but we're told, oh, no, you know, the jobs Americans won't do. And then we're told we need to bring in foreign students because God knows Americans are too stupid. Well, yeah, we're stupid when you look at who we keep reelecting to office and putting into elected office. Not making our demands known is pretty stupid when you come down to it. But we hear all this business about the foreign students. Well, you know, first of all, I'd love to know why we aren't providing educational opportunities for kids in America who are living in poverty. And according to a recent 60 Minutes report, 1 in 4 American kids now lives below the poverty line. 1 in 4. Remarkable. It would be a great investment in America's future, as well as the future of these Americans, to help to subsidize the education of American kids and then make sure they get jobs. Unlike now, we have kids coming out of college running up student loans that look like mortgages and finding no work. That's insanity. But guess how many schools are authorized to bring in foreign students? It'll blow your mind. Make sure your seatbelt is firmly fastened and the tray in front of you is in the upright position. 10,000. You heard me. 10,000 schools are authorized to issue a form known as the I-20. The I-20, when issued to a foreign national, enables him or her to go to a U.S. consulate or embassy and get a student visa to come to the United States. Why bother going to a smuggler when you can go to the embassy and get a visa as a student? Why bother paying a smuggler when you can pay a school that may not even exist? Because with that number of schools, I can assure you, and the GAO points it out, that a number of those schools have never been audited or investigated. They don't even know if they exist anywhere but on paper. 10,000 schools. Guess how many foreign students have been admitted into the United States, allegedly, to study here? 850,000. And again, if they don't show up in school, the Obama administration's policy of not arresting illegal aliens until and unless they have been convicted of committing serious felonies. I don't know what other kind of felonies there are. But never mind if you violate the immigration laws. That's not really a big deal. We're not going to look for you. This is don't ask, don't tell. If you're here illegally, we want to give you employment authorization. Ask President Obama. That's what he calls prosecutorial discretion. I call prosecutorial deception. So once you come here as a student, even if you never go to school or you drop out of school or whatever, no one's going to look for you. That game of hide-and-seek is over. You're here. You're here. 850,000 foreign students admitted into the United States, hopefully to attend school, but God knows. Certainly ICE doesn't know. Astonishing. And then they found that 38% of the flight schools never filed the entire paperwork package that they were supposed to file. They even found one flight school in particular, you ready for this one, that was owned and operated by illegal aliens. But they wouldn't tell us what country the aliens were from. But, you know, what the heck. Flight schools owned and operated by illegal aliens, teaching other illegal aliens how to fly. But meanwhile, TSA strip searches 85-year-old women and 4-year-old children and irradiates all of us, or most of us, when we try to get on board an airplane. Now, look, I'm all for airline security. I do a lot of flying. I do a lot of speaking engagements. I certainly don't want to get a window on what becomes a de facto cruise missile. I don't want to get a window seat on a cruise missile. But could you imagine that they put Americans through this meat grinder, if you will, this process? But meanwhile, we have flight schools owned and operated by illegal aliens teaching other illegal aliens how to fly. Can you make this up? But yet we're told we have national security. We are told our borders have never been more secure, but the dope keeps flowing across the borders like water running down Niagara Falls. It's remarkable. See, we've been using, or the government has cynically been using the wrong metric. Oh, the borders are secure because arrests are down. No. How about the drugs coming across the border, the cocaine and the heroin, the stuff that's not grown here, the stuff that has to be smuggled into the United States? If our borders were secure, those rat poisons wouldn't be coming into America. But guess what? They are flowing freely across the border. Oh, yes, they make the occasional seizure. It's good for public relations. But by and large, there's no impediment to the dope. I lost friends in law enforcement doing narcotics investigations. My good friend Everett Hatcher, DEA agent, killed in 1989. He was at my desk earlier that same day that he was killed. I said, "Hatch, what are you doing here?" And ironically enough, I was assigned to DEA intelligence. And he said, "Mike, how would you like to trade jobs?" Neither of us could have imagined that just a few short hours later, he would be dead with two bullet wounds to the head. What did Hatch die for? Why are our valiant police officers, federal agents, and state troopers conducting drug investigations when at the end of the day, those borders are nothing more than a speed bump to smugglers? This is crazy stuff. We see commercials against cigarette smoking. They're very effective. Buy a car today, you'd be hard-pressed to find an ashtray or a cigarette lighter in a passenger car these days. Certainly the cigarette commercials work, and that's fine. I don't like cigarette smoke. My dad died of lung cancer. He had a 3-pack-a-day Chesterfield habit. So between that and his exposure to asbestos on construction and the Navy shipyards of the Second World War, he died when he was young. I carried him off his job his last day at work. So if we did away with cigarettes, believe me, I wouldn't miss them. But if we could have that kind of an impact on cigarette smoke, why is no effort being made to stop people from using the poisons, the cocaine and the heroin, the methamphetamine, and all that other garbage? You know, the time has come for our country to have real leaders. We're not getting leaders. We have no leaders when nobody thinks to stand up and say, you know something? Our immigration laws are vital for the safety and security of America and Americans. There are a couple of heroes. You have to dig deep and look wide to find them, but you can find them. At the top of my personal list of heroes on the Hill, you'd have to talk about Lou Barletta, former mayor of Hazleton, Pennsylvania. I had the privilege of being his final witness when he was the mayor of Hazleton. Now he's a congressman. He got sued by the ACLU for enacting ordinances to combat illegal immigration because the federal government wouldn't do it. And it was remarkable. He was furious because there had been murders, there had been shootings, there was drugs being sold on the streets of the town he had grown up in as a kid, a very bucolic town in the mountains of Pennsylvania. It used to be a coal mining town. And all of a sudden, the whole situation changed because of this problem with transnational gangs that invaded his community. So he's certainly a hero. Steve King, another hero, congressman from Iowa, I consider him a friend. Jeff Sessions, senator from Alabama. Chuck Grassley, absolutely. But, you know, Ted Poe is trying to do the right thing in Congress. But the problem is, not enough members of Congress get it or are willing to get it. You know, my dad used to say to me that I would ultimately teach people how they should treat me by demonstrating what I was willing to accept. So the question comes, what exactly is it that we as Americans are willing to accept? We have fallen into this pattern of vilifying fellow Americans that we disagree with, and we shouldn't be doing that. Yes, there are people whose views are abhorrent to me, views I don't agree with. But you know something? This is America. And the founding fathers of this country said that not only did we have in the First Amendment freedom of speech and freedom of press and freedom of religion, but we also had the right to seek redress of grievances and the right to peaceably assemble. Well, why on earth do you think they wanted us to be able to peaceably assemble? Because at the founding of this country, there was no Twitter, there was no Facebook, there was no internet, there was no telephone, there was no talk radio, there was no television. The only way to have a conversation or a debate or an argument was live and in person. And all they said was, be civil about it. Leave your clubs, your knives, and your guns at home. Have that conversation, but do it peaceably. And, you know, it's remarkable because, you know, the Tea Party is look at the occupiers as the enemy, and the occupiers look at the Tea Party as the enemy. And this is a game of divide and conquer. It doesn't mean that I agree with everybody in the Tea Party or everybody who's an occupier. You know, I mean, this is the way it works. But those Americans who are standing up and saying that we need to change the equation because what's going on isn't working are on to something. It certainly is not working. It's not working that America no longer has a viable manned space program. It's no longer working that Americans place so far down the list of education successes, whether it's math or whether it's science. It's no longer working when CBS Radio here in New York just a couple of short weeks ago talked about how the number of people in the middle class, the percentages in the middle class have declined from 61% to 51%, and then went on and said that the middle class were people who earned between, I believe the number was $35,000 or $36,000 a year and $118,000 a year. Could somebody tell me how on earth anybody could be considered middle class while making $36,000 or even $40,000 a year when you have to pay almost $5 for a gallon of gasoline in some municipalities? Think about that. Think about what it's going to cost people to heat their homes when the winter comes at the rate that fuel oil prices are going. Think about what all of the increase in costs for transportation will translate at the supermarket when you have to buy produce and other products that had to be shipped, you know, great distances to get to the marketplace. Prices are going up. The value of the paycheck is staying stagnant, or the size of most people's paycheck, if they still have one, is staying stagnant. It's not working. But corporations are doing well. You know, this is that disconnect. Is America really doing well when Americans are not? If this is truly a government by the people, for the people, it's not doing well. Because Americans, by and large, are not doing well. And if we cannot understand that there is a link between how well the average American does and how well America as a nation does, then we're screwed. Because the whole idea to a country doing well is for opportunities to be in place for its citizens to do well. That's why we have the immigration laws. You know, it may sound like a dirty word to the globalists out there, you know, the open borders crowd. Oh, my God, we shouldn't be protecting the workforce. Well, just think about something. If we kill the middle class, we will be killing off the biggest consumer engine in the history of the planet. It was Americans who bought the pet rock. It was Americans who were dumb enough to then go out and buy the training manual for the pet rock. A couple of weeks ago, I was in Washington. One of the groups I work with is Allen L. Fried Associates. They do seminars for the government. It's a privilege to be part of that speakers bureau for a bunch of years. And I said to these folks, can you imagine some guy saying to his wife at the dinner table, honey, I'm so excited. What a success. I finally taught our pet rock how to play dead. I mean, the training manual for the pet rock? Think about that. It's nuts. But that's what Americans did. And that was what George W. Bush told us that we were supposed to do in the wake of 9/11. Go to the mall and spend money. Unbelievable. You know, I'm old enough to remember when Sputnik was launched. I was in the fifth grade. And immediately the call went out, we've got to teach science. And I was already into science because I started studying astronomy on my own in second grade. Science became the buzzword. So they actually had me give a talk about science one day a week for an hour in my fifth grade class. Because America and Americans and our leaders said, you know what, we're not doing a good enough job of motivating our kids to learn about science and math. And what are we doing today? What are we doing today? Telling people that they've got to mortgage themselves up to their eyeballs so they can spend more money on garbage, so that corporations can increase profit margins. We can't separate America from Americans. It's un-American to do that. We need to understand that the well-being of our citizens is the responsibility of our government. That's why we have the military, to keep our enemies from destroying us. That's why we have law enforcement authorities, to prevent the bad guys from victimizing citizens and others who live in our country. And it all comes back to a lack of integrity, a lack of political will and spine. America cannot survive if its borders become nothing more than lines on a map. America cannot win a war on terror if we have millions of foreign nationals in our country and there's no way of knowing who they are or why they're here. Because these are people who are here in violation of law, who were led into our country by the ineptitude or corruption of our own government. I don't want to see a day come when we don't let people into America. And you should know that every year the United States admits more than 1.1 million lawful immigrants. We give them green cards. We put them on a pathway to citizenship. And then we're told, you know, if we don't let all these illegals in, who's going to work on the farms? Well, what you may not know is that Mexican farm workers are able to apply for farm work visas, and generally the applications are approved the same day. And generally there's no limit on the number of the visas that we can issue. So it's not that there's no system in place. It's lie after lie, it's mythology after mythology, it's propaganda following propaganda. The problem is that the Chamber of Commerce and others who are so fired up to increase the number of people who come to America so that profits will go up have been blinded to the dangers this creates for all of us. The travel and hospitality industries have partnered with the Chamber of Commerce. And what do they partner with them for? To create something called the Discover America Partnership. A long time ago, one of my friends on the Hill said to me that these folks had a goal. They wanted as many illegal aliens to change the sheets in the hotels as possible and to have as many wealthy tourists from overseas come to America, spend their money, and sleep on those same sheets. This is crazy stuff. America is not at its best when we see people being exploited. America is not at its best when American kids who go to college can't get a job with their newly minted degrees. America is not at its best when hundreds of cities are infested by the Mexican drug cartels. This doesn't serve anybody's interests or purposes. And remember what happened in the wake of the terrorist attacks of September 11th, 2001. It was seen as an act of patriotism, a courageous act of patriotism, to get on an airplane and fly anywhere, if you remember. They made a big deal about people flying to New York to go to Broadway shows, to come to restaurants, because America stopped traveling. Tourism dropped through the floorboards. If, God forbid, there was another terrorist attack, I assure you, the travel industry will be the first to get hammered. What needs to be understood, again, is why we have those laws and what it would mean to really enforce the laws effectively. Those immigration laws in most countries are seen as being an adjunct to what their military does. Some countries, in fact, use the military to secure their borders. Now, I'm not calling for a militarization of our borders, but I'd like to see the military back up the Border Patrol. This idea that we put Border Patrol agents in harm's way and you have heavily armed drug traffickers coming through the border where it's so perilous that there are signs posted warning people that large swaths of America's southern border have become basically free fire zones, where they're warned that they may encounter heavily armed smugglers driving at high rates of speed. In America, north of the border, not south of the border. We are losing our sovereignty in parts of America to the drug cartels. Just a couple of weeks ago, Pelley over at CBS News did a story about how Jack Riley, the special agent in charge of the DEA office in Chicago, actually said that there were neighborhoods in Chicago that resembled Mexican border towns because the drug cartels were engaged in gunfire, shootouts in the middle of the street over control of turf the way they were in Mexico. Since Felipe Calderon took office during his administration, which just ended, it's believed that over 50,000 Mexicans were slaughtered in the drug wars. Something evil this way comes, and part of it are these drug cartels coming to America. But it's not just from Mexico. You know, look at the transnational gangs, whether they're from Russia or Asia, whether they're from Africa or the Caribbean. You know, criminals know no race, religion, or ethnicity. Every group of people have within them the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that's the reason for the immigration laws, to try to keep people out who would do harm to us. And ironically, the most likely victim of the violence perpetrated by these gangs are the members of the immigrant communities, because those communities have residents who have family members in the home countries. So not only are they at risk of being harmed, but their family members are at risk. Imagine some guy immigrates to the United States and it's taken him years to get here and it's finally a done deal and he thinks, wow, I can rebuild my life brand new all over again. And then he encounters the same thugs on the streets here in the United States that used to keep him awake in his home country. And they tell him, listen, you're going to help us out here, because if you don't, we know where your brother lives back home. We know where your mother lives back home. We know where your son is visiting. And it could be in Moscow, it could be in Kingston, Jamaica, or it could be in Guadalajara in Mexico. Doesn't matter. It's the same tactic. And suddenly, this guy who thought that he was freed from the clutches of these evil bums finds that they've accompanied him here to the United States. Because our government that keeps on telling us our borders have never been more secure has never been lying more than it's lying. These are lies. These are lies, and it's costing lives. People are dying because of all this. It's estimated that over 70% of all crime, directly or indirectly, is drug-related. Yet the drugs flow freely across our borders, the same borders that we're being assured have never been more secure. This is crazy stuff, folks. This is truly crazy, and it's got to stop. And as Americans, we have it's our birthright to stand up to those who make the false accusations. You know, we tend to be very compassionate people. We don't want to be accused of being racists or bigots. Certainly, words of bigotry in my world are far more vile and contemptible than words that deal with anatomical body parts and body functions, you know. But the bottom line is that Americans tend to back down. As soon as they're accused of being racist, they'll say, gee, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it, and the conversation ends. That has to stop. That has to stop. When people make the accusation, shut them down by telling them the truth. This isn't about racism. This is about common sense. It's not racist to lock your door at night to make sure that criminals don't come into your house while you're fast asleep. That's common sense. It's not antisocial to lock your door at night when the police warn you that there are criminals staging burglaries and home invasions. That's common sense. So how is it that we have this disconnect where when people call for the enforcement of immigration laws and they're told, oh, you guys are racists and bigots and that sort of thing, and most people don't have the guts to stand up to these thugs and say, you're full of you-know-what. This isn't about being opposed to people of any flavor, any skin color, any ethnicity. This is simply about making certain that people who come to America don't pose a threat to our well-being. I've often made the analogy, but I think it bears repeating. Every house has a front door. Most front doors come equipped with a peephole and a doorbell so that you can make a conscious, informed decision as to whether or not to permit a stranger into your home. That's what the immigration laws are supposed to do. The idea that this administration is giving millions of illegal aliens, potentially millions, employment authorization and without any way of even knowing who they are, which creates a national security nightmare for everybody, and the fact that so far Mitt Romney hasn't spoken a word about it, is more than a little disturbing to me. It should be disturbing to you. We need real leadership in America. Leadership, you know, I spoke about my dad, how when he would show up when there was a problem, I always felt like the cavalry had arrived. That's the kind of leadership we should have every right to expect from our own government. To look at our leaders and say, everything's under control because we have good leaders. It's our job to hire our leaders. Because at the end of the day, folks, they do work for us, don't they? We, the people, must be involved not just on election day, but 365 days a year. When we go to restaurants, we're very specific about the food that we want to eat and the way that we want it prepared. And when we can read stories about how a Polish criminal was allowed to remain in the United States for more than two decades, even though he went to jail, even though he was convicted of drug trafficking, then you know we're not getting leadership from our government. You know that we're not being protected. And the question is, what are we supposed to do about it? Take it, allow this foolishness to continue, and watch more people die needlessly, watch more people lose their homes to foreclosure, or stand up and tell these people that we hired these elected so-called leaders what's expected of them. If you ran a company the same way that we allow our government to be run, I guarantee you, whatever the business, it would go bankrupt. It wouldn't survive. And it wouldn't survive because of bad leadership at the top. And the top of our government is really we the people. Problem is, we've been missing in action for far too long. We have an obligation. The obligation that we bear is to send our leaders marching orders that are clear and unambiguous. That's the work Americans not only can do, but must do. You know, it's really great being back on the program with all of you today. It's a good thing to be able to share the perspectives. I hope you find this to be helpful to you as well. If you like the program, please tell your friends and neighbors about it. I'm not going to claim I have all the answers, but I will tell you that where immigration is concerned, this is not a single issue, but a singular issue. And if you stop and think about what happens or what has been happening, because our government has refused to secure our borders, the price we're paying is both red and green. It's costing us lots of money, and it's costing us lots of lives. That should no longer be the case. We really need to change the equation. Please make it your business to reach out to all of your elected representatives. If you see a news story, by the way, that you think does not represent honest, unbiased reporting, let that news organization hear from you also, because they do have some serious concerns about their readership, their subscribers, their viewers, their listeners, because unlike this program, they count on advertisers for their income. My program doesn't make money. I hope it makes sense, however. It makes sense for all of you who are out there listening to me this evening. So please get involved. Make your leaders accountable. Make the so-called journalists accountable. And when you hear journalists talk about the mythical Latino vote, call them out for it. It's profiling and it's insidious. When you could look at someone's skin color or someone's religion, look at my Jewish star and pretend to know who I'm going to vote for because I'm part of the Jewish vote, that's dangerous and it's anti-American. The most likely victims, in fact, of the ethnic organized crime groups are the members of the immigrant community. The people who suffer the highest unemployment rate are American blacks and American Latinos. They're suffering the most. Why on earth any American citizen of any flavor would be thrilled with a politician who wants to ignore the borders of the United States and the immigration laws that were intended to protect American lives and jobs makes no sense. And I can tell you, when I've traveled around this big country of ours, I've met lots of our fellow Americans who, in fact, are Latinos, who couldn't agree with me more on that issue. So we need to stop the mythology, and we need to get back to having the truth be the one constant in this country. The truth does seem to be in short supply these days. And only we, the people, can make that happen. You know, I always like to end commentaries with the simple statement that democracy is not a spectator sport. Please take those words to heart. Get involved. Election Day is coming soon. We, the people, need to get our voices heard. I thank you so much for spending the last hour with me, everybody. Hope you all have a wonderful weekend coming up. See you next week. Same place, same time. Good night, everybody.